Welcome to Podski Wee Wee. I'm Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham.
Mike, we got a ton to talk about, some good stuff. Football is back. So that's happy times, right?
Very happy times. It's the best time of the year in my opinion. It's like Christmas.
Okay, but before we get to the news, I have a confession to make. And Mike, I know because you're super religious, and please note that I said that with my tongue firmly planted in my cheek. I'm going to need you to absolve me of a sin. Are you okay with that?
Tell me what you got.
Okay, so the last few weeks, you and I have sat down to record, and I've been talking about how excited I was for the upcoming season and how we're so close. It's here. And I'm here to admit that I was kind of faking it. I was not as excited about the upcoming season as I let on. And it didn't hit me until I sat down earlier this week, or I guess late last week, to purchase tickets to the Ticats Argos game in June at BMO, the season opener, the big one. And before that, I was having a really hard time getting super excited for this season. And then I bought those tickets and I was like, it feels real. And it was the kick in the arse that I needed to finally get that passion for the game back. So what I'm confessing and what I need you to absolve me of is being a bit of a phony. It's a confession of all that excitement I had that I was proclaiming I had for the start of the season. It wasn't true. It wasn't true. I was being a bad podcaster. I was lying to the fans. I was lying to you. And I just need you to forgive me because it's back. The excitement is back. I got the tickets in hand for that Argos Ticats game now, and now I'm ready. I'm ready for the start of the season. Do you forgive me?
I do forgive you. Now it's just I understand because last year I knew that you were kind of disgruntled with how the season went for the Ticats and the league as a whole. But you know, once you get the training camp starts up and everything like that, that's when I started to get really, really pumped about the season, and the warm weather comes and you can just, you know, you can feel that beer in your hand as you sit in the stands watching football. And that's got me really excited.
Okay, so I'm just glad that you absolved me. Listeners out there, let me know if you absolved me of this sin of phoniness. I was almost willing myself to be excited and happy for the upcoming season. I just couldn't do it. But then buying those tickets and knowing that there's 8 of us, including myself, that are going to be rolling into BMO Field on that, what I'm hoping is a beautiful Sunday afternoon in late June, to cheer on the Ticats as they take on the Argos to open the season. It got the juices flowing. It got me pumped. And now I'm fully ready for the start of the new CFL season. And yeah, camp starting up has obviously had an impact as well. But it was buying those tickets where it just, it's tangible. Like, I could feel it. And now I'm ready. But I was lying before, but I'm not lying now. Now I'm in. I'm 100% in. New season, can't wait.
Yeah, I'm right there with you.
Awesome. So let's get to the news. We have a lot to talk about since the last time you and I sat down. A whole host of stuff has happened. We're going to start like we always do with the Ticats, and the first one is the biggie. Andy Fantuz is back, sort of. He has signed with the team, but he's in a front office capacity as a coordinator. I got it written down here. The coordinator of player development. Now, I don't know what the hell that is. I don't think anyone knows what the hell that is. The Ticats obviously have a role designed for him, and Fantuz knows what it is, but the hell if we know what it is. But that's his role. And then apparently, once he's healthy enough to play, as we all know, he suffered an ACL injury late last season. They're saying possibly Labor Day. He could be back. We'll have to wait and see. But once he's healthy to play, he will sign a player contract with the team, and he'll be back on the field. So Andy Fantuz is staying with the Ticats, which is a good thing. But this deal kind of rubbed people the wrong way. They thought maybe this was some sort of circumvention of the salary cap, and if he's in the front office, then he shouldn't also be allowed to be a player. And it seems like Ticat fans are pretty happy, and the other 8 fans of the other 8 teams, not so much. Where do you kind of stand on what the Ticats did here? Do you think it's okay, or do you think it's a little fishy?
I think it's fine, as long as they didn't break any rules. If they're not breaking the rules, then they should take every advantage they can get to, you know, help out this team to be a championship team. So I don't have a problem with it. Obviously, I'm biased because I'm a Ticats fan, but You know, if they're not breaking rules, Tillman can get away with this stuff, then let them do it until they make a rule to make them stop doing it.
So I'm feeling two ways about this. One, do you remember a couple years ago, the Argos kind of did the same thing with Chad Kackert? He retired, which I'm putting in quotes, because he was injured. He became their strength and conditioning coach, I think. And then once he was healthy enough to play, they signed him to a player contract. He was put on the practice roster, and he was playing within a week's time. So this isn't unprecedented. It's not like the Ticats are doing this, and it's never been done before. And the other thing is, I will be on board with the other team's fans if it comes out that Fantuz then signed a minimum level contract with the team, because we all know that Andy Fantuz is maybe and arguably still the best Canadian receiver in the CFL. So if he was to come back, say, around Labor Day and sign a prorated veteran minimum deal, I think it would be a little fishy. So I'm going to hold off judgment. As of right now, I think there's no problem with what they're doing. The league signed off on it, so obviously the league does not have a problem with what they're doing. And it's also, I think Andy Fantuz is going to be involved with this organization now probably for as long as he wants to be. I can't imagine him playing anywhere else. If he's going to go into a front office or a coaching capacity, it'll probably be with the Ticats. Close to home, I think this is where he wants to be. I think this role that they've carved out for him shows that this is where he wants to be and that the team wants him back. Shows a level of loyalty to a player that you don't see often, especially in a salary cap era and just in general, players. You don't see guys do stuff like this. You don't see teams do this for players. So I think that's nice, but I will hold off on any sort of backlash judgment, like, oh no, this was wrong, until we actually see how this all plays out. But I'm with you. As of right now, the league signed off on it. They said it was okay. Then I can't really say that it's not.
Yeah, if you look at it, it's a win-win for the team and for Fantuz. For the team, you know, he's not going anywhere else to come back and bite us in the ass in October or November or whenever he's able to play. Because last season, he was phenomenal out there. Maybe the best he's been in his career. He was just, you know, just such a clutch guy. But for him, it's a way to get a jump on his future career in football, you know, in the head office or whatever, in coaching or whatever he wants to do. This is a good opportunity for him to get a jump ahead on that.
Yeah, I think you're right. This is really good for him as well. Just for all the reasons you said, it gives that career after football, which I think he must clearly want to stay in football in some capacity, and his career is coming to an end. This gives him a chance to maybe even just see, like, is this something I'd want to do? I'm all for the move. Again, obviously, people are going to hear this and say, well, we're Ticat fans, so we're biased. But I am holding out reservation that if we find out that there's some player contract shenanigans that go on later in the year, then I might not be for this as much as I am right now. But as I sit here right now, like I said, I can't see anything wrong with it.
No, me neither.
So, moving on, we'll get into some a player that's Fantuz staying. We'll get into a player who's leaving. Jake Olson surprisingly announced his retirement late last week, and this got your dander up a little bit, didn't it?
Did I'm concerned. I'm paranoid about this offensive line. I've been going, you know, oh, it's gonna be fine. We were talking about it before. With the starters that we projected, then now Olsen's not coming back, and I've been thinking about all the offensive linemen that just like left the team. You know, Simmons, and there was a couple other guys, you know, depth guys, and there weren't necessarily going to be starters on the offensive line. But man, I'm worried. I mean, we were hoping that Olsen would come back and be that at that left tackle position, or what was the right tackle that he played?
He played left tackle, but that's where Xavier Fulton's playing, so yeah. I always projected him to move over to the right side.
Yeah, so either way, I'm pretty sure we both expected him to be on the field as a starting offensive lineman this year after that bad injury he had. But I guess he isn't recovering well from it and just feels like he can't play anymore, or maybe he just doesn't have the passion. I'm not sure why he retired, but I think it's a blow to the offensive line and this offense in total.
I agree with you, but I'll take a little bit more of a positive view of this. When we saw Jeremy Lewis get released, who was the starter for 15 or 16 games last year, started like 30 or 40 games for the team over the course of his time here. It happened just after mini camps, and we had all assumed, okay, Olsen will be ready. But there's a couple of guys that they must have seen in those mini camps, and two names that stick out, because in following what's happened at camp so far, Malcolm Bunch and Jordan Swindle are two guys they brought in during minicamp, and they've been splitting reps with the starting offense on the line during camp. So I'm thinking maybe they saw something in these other two guys, and it might not be as worrisome. Now, they're rookies, so that's always a concern. Guys, especially offensive linemen, I once talked to Brian Simmons, and I asked him, what was the most difficult thing about coming to Canada? And he said it was the yard off the ball. And he said it took him almost a year. And I think I've said this before on the show. It took him almost a year to get used to playing that 1 yard off the ball with the defensive lineman comes in, and it, you know, affects how you step and what you do as an offensive lineman, because you're so used to playing with the American rules where that defensive lineman is like right in your face. So we could see some issues there, but I still think this is a pretty decent group. 4/5 of this offensive line is pretty set. I think one of these kids is going to come out and probably become the starter, and we're going to get a chance in a couple weeks to see him in a couple preseason games. Yes, it would obviously be better if Olsen was around, but I don't think I'm as scared about this as you are.
Okay, well, let's just take a look at who we got as backups for us. I went through the roster online. I'm not sure how up to date it is, but these are some of the names I got, which two guys you already mentioned. Swindle, he's a rookie. Bunchy, rookie. Landon Rice has been here for 3 years. You know, he started some games, but he'd probably be a starter if he was, you know, starting material. Schramm, our draft pick, and White. And I'd like to steal a line from one of my favorite movies of all time, Major League. Who the f*** are these guys? I mean, if there's a couple injuries, we have no experience on the offensive line, and that is very concerning to me.
I will agree with you there, no doubt. Injuries to the offensive line would be devastating. Not the right. I don't think it's devastating. It would be concerning. I will say that. Definitely concerning. But now you're kind of getting me on your side here, and I don't like that because I wanted to be Mr. Positivity today. Okay, you kind of won me over a little bit, but let's see how these kids do in a game situation. And yes, I know it's only going to be preseason, but we're less than 2 weeks away from watching these guys play the Ottawa Redblacks, the defending Grey Cup champions. Let's see how these guys do in some game action against some guys who will also be fighting for jobs and will also be – some of them will be new to the league. So it's always tough, obviously, to judge completely from the preseason, but – but let's, before we start sounding the alarms, Mike, let's just see these kids play, see what they can do, and who knows, maybe we didn't know who Jake Olsen was when he came here. Right? So perhaps one of these guys is just like him, and he'll acclimatize himself well to the league and to the team, and we won't have anything to worry about.
Hopefully. I will say that, you know, Austin seems to have an eye for talent on the offensive line with the Bauman trade a couple years ago and drafting Revenberg last year. So hopefully you're right and one of these kids can be the real deal.
Well, and don't forget it was Austin who after the 2013 season decided to part ways with Marwan Hage, who was arguably the best center in the CFL, to go with Mike Filer. And Mike Filer's been pretty darn good since he took over for Hage in 2014. So yeah, there's always concerns when it comes to – let's be honest. I think both of us – and I think Ticat fans around the globe would have wanted Jake Olsen to be the starting right tackle or the starting left tackle with Xavier Fulton moving right, whatever they would have had. That would have been the dream scenario. I think that would have been a stellar offensive line. But I just don't want to worry too much until we actually get a chance to watch these guys go against some live competition and we can see what they can do.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I guess I'll take my medication and stop panicking so much.
I don't think – you're right. The depth on the offensive line of this team is concerning, especially with the Canadians. Matthew Girard's retirement, the release of Peter Diakowski. Like, there is some concerns there that I do understand. I know what you're doing. I know how you're feeling.
They concentrated so much on the defensive backfield in the offseason, which was, you know, needed badly. But I feel like they kind of neglected the O-line again, and we'll see. We'll see how it goes.
We will see how it goes indeed. All right, moving on to the next subject. Brandon Banks took a rather sizable pay cut to stay with the team this year, and What do you think this means for him going forward? Do you think this could be the final year we see Brandon Banks in a Ticat uniform?
It all depends on how he performs. If he has a season like he did, 2015, 2014, if we see that Brandon Banks, then no, I think they'll try to get him back. But if he doesn't raise those numbers, raise his performance, then it could be a big possibility that this is the last season we see him.
It's funny, too, because last year, while his play definitely decreased as the season went on, and obviously he was suspended for violating the drug policy late in the year, although it wasn't for a performance-enhancing drug, it was for a recreational drug. So let's get that out of the way before everyone starts piling on the guy for doing steroids or whatever. It wasn't that. I think he was doing, MDMA or something? He was popping Molly or something like that?
Yeah. So,
he was doing party drugs, so he was doing it to relax or have a good time. It wasn't anything nefarious.
Per se.
But, he did still lead the league in return touchdowns. He still has the ability to be a dynamite playmaker. We saw last year this team lost a ton of special teams players, and I think that played a role in how Banks was able to perform with a new special teams coordinator this year. I think it'll be interesting to see what kind of goes on with the special teams unit. That's something I'm going to be paying close attention to come preseason especially. So I don't know, though. Like, he's going to be pushing 30. I believe he'll be 30 when the season ends. And he's a speed guy, and he's tiny, and he's not a guy who does a ton on offense. I wouldn't be surprised if Brandon Banks is playing somewhere else next year. I don't want that to happen. I hope he comes out this year, has another wonderful season, has a bunch of return touchdowns, gives the team great field position on a bunch of punts and kickoffs. But it would not shock me if we were seeing number 16 play somewhere else in 2018.
Yeah, and that would be a shame to see him play for another CFL team. I think that if he lasts a couple more years, a couple more really productive years in Hamilton, he could be a Ticat legend, on the Wall of Honor someday. So I'm really pulling for him that he gets the right blocking in front of him, gets all that stuff going so he can hit the holes and have a huge season, because, he's one of the most exciting return men that I've ever seen in this league. So yeah, 30's getting up there, but you look at a guy like Stefan Logan, and he's probably 4 or 5 years older than Banks, and he's still killing it. So hopefully we get those results from Brandon Banks in the years to come.
So speaking of players leaving, last time we sat down, we talked about Spencer Watt's release, but he was one of six players that was let go by the team. So we're not going to talk about Watt again, because we already talked about that, but a pair of DBs were let go, and Travis Lee and Cassius Vaughn. They let go of defensive end Mike McAdoo, defensive lineman Delano Johnson, and wide receiver Frankie Okafor. Now, there's one name, obviously, that stands out here, and that is Cassius Vaughn. Fans were pretty happy that he was let go, because he had a pretty poor showing last year, and he was re-signed in the winter, and people were kind of surprised by that, and didn't even make it to main camp with the team. So I think clearly the upgrades that this team has made in the secondary has allowed them to let go of a guy who they probably were very high on and were hoping would rebound this year, but they let him go. Are you surprised? How do you feel about that?
Well, I'm a little bit surprised, just because they, signed him again and then let him go again. So I was a little bit surprised they didn't bring him into camp, but they let him go, and guess who picks him up?
Yeah. Yeah. Where is he going, Mike?
Yeah, he's going to those Argos.
So
Toronto Tiger Cats.
Yeah, they're turning into the Toronto Tiger Alouettes when you think about it. A lot of ex-Owls and a lot of ex-Ticats playing for the Argos this year.
Yep, it's an interesting team they're building over there.
It really is. We'll get to some moves that they made a little later. Any other surprises? I think the Delano Johnson release was the one that kind of sparked the idea in me that this team is probably going to start two Canadians on the defensive line. And we'll get into what I've heard and what we've heard about training camp in a little bit. But it looks to me like it's going to be Ted Laurent and Michael Atkinson. And I think with all the moves they made in the draft to bring in a bunch of defensive linemen, I would be really surprised now, especially with there being not really any veteran. Actually, I don't think there's any veteran American defensive tackles on this team. I think we're looking at a double Canadians up front in the middle with Teddy Laurent and Big Mikey Atkinson.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that. Ted LaRon has proven himself over the years to be one of the best inside guys on the defensive line. And Atkinson, I thought, played really well when he got in there last season. So I know they had really high hopes for him when he got drafted years ago, and hopefully he can really raise his game to an all-star player.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see. I thought he was excellent at the end of last season, and I think he's one of those guys where you've watched him grow when he's been with this team. He has earned the right to start for this club, and hey, the more Canadians you can start, the more talented Canadians you have, the better it is. The two hallmarks of a great CFL team is a high caliber quarterback and great Canadian talent and depth. Ticats kind of have that this year, so there's a little bit more optimism this year. Camp's opening up. We might as well move into that now, talking about the opening training camp. Zach Collaros was healthy, so he had a regular, normal offseason. He's getting day one reps for first team reps on day one. That's got to make you pretty happy if you're a Ticat fan.
Oh yeah, for sure. I mean, this is the season that he comes in not having a off season of rehabbing an injury. So just to see him on the field, he can be the best quarterback in the league. I truly believe that. So yeah, I'm pumped to see him out there.
So, like I said, camp has opened. So we're 2 days into training camp. There's some stuff that's happened. We just talked about Michael Atkinson and how he's been taking starters reps beside Ted Laurent. So that's one thing. The kicking battle looks like we got three names: Sergio Castillo, Ryan Hawkins, and Craig Peterson. So we're probably going to see those guys in some preseason action. Those look like they're going to be the guys. One of those three is going to be the guy going forward for this team. You have any favorites in that group? Castillo's a bit of a known entity, but the other two aren't really.
Yeah.
So I guess you kind of lean towards him, right?
Yeah, I'd have to. I don't know anything about those other two kickers, so I'd have to go with Castillo.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I wish that this team could settle on a kicker and find a guy like a Justin Medlock, have him long term. But, if you're going to rotate through guys, this is what we got to deal with, I guess.
It is a kind of a large gamble to not necessarily know what kind of kicker you're getting when you're going into the season, because missed field goal here or there could be a big difference in many games. So hopefully they have, like, out of those three guys, hopefully one of those guys is a starting kicker in this league.
If they can get out of those guys what they got out of Brett Maher most of last season, I think I'd be pretty happy.
Yeah, for sure.
So starting receivers been something that we've kind of wondered about a little bit. Who are going to be the five guys that take those first team reps? Wondering maybe they'd go with an All-American receiving core. Seems as if on the first 2 days, the starting five have been Terrence Tolliver and Luke Tasker, should be no surprise to anyone. Brian Timms, who was the standout at the end of last year, I think that shocks no one either. Kevin Elliott, who they brought back, who I thought was the team's best receiver once Andy Fantuzz went down. I thought Elliott was fantastic once he came to the team. I'm really happy that they re-signed him. And the fifth guy is a Canadian. It is Mike Jones. So it looks like they're still sticking with a Canadian in that fifth receiving spot. So again, no real changes to the ratio there, except I guess when Fantuzz had two Canadians. Now they don't really need to have that, but still a Canadian starting receiving core, which kind of surprised me a little bit.
Yeah, I thought they would have tried to go with the five American receivers, but I guess they must be high on this Mike Jones kid. I know that he didn't have that much playing time last year. Didn't overly impress when he got in there, but I know that he's got a ton of speed, so hopefully maybe Claros can find him, down the sideline a couple times this season.
Yeah, do you follow Derek Taylor on Twitter by any chance?
Yeah.
He's been putting out stats all off season long, obviously. The guy's a stats junkie, and you get some really good information from him. Zach Collaros was the number one rated quarterback when it came to throwing to the far side of the field. So if we see a guy, Mike Jones has a lot of speed. If he's a guy that can get some familiarity and comfortability with Collaros, you could probably see them use that side of the field a lot more often than most teams do, because if you don't have a quarterback that can make that throw, you're not going to throw out there. And Jones is fast, very, very fast. Unlike a lot of the guys that you see play that spot, like especially Canadian, you don't really see a ton of fast Canadian receivers in general. You think of your Brad Sinopoli's, your Chris Getzlaf's, your Andy Fantuzzi's. Like, they're not speed demons by any stretch of the imagination. Jones is quick, so a guy out there on a deep route could be a connection or two out there this season.
Or maybe some wide receiver screens. They do that with Banks occasionally, throw it out there and let us use his legs and get some blocks in front of him and rack up the yards.
Now, I don't normally pat myself on the back for getting things correctly. We are more known here for joking about the things that we get wrong, but we've been wondering all offseason, man, who's this team going to start at Sam linebacker? A month or so ago, I wrote a piece for Three Down Nation outlining who I thought would be some of the candidates, and my number one guy was Dominique Ellis, who played halfback for the team last year, but now with Emmanuel Davis and the signing of Abdul Kinney, those halfback spots are kind of taken. They've moved Ellis down on the first couple of days of camp to play that Sam linebacker position, and I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I called it, so I'm a genius, but I did call it, and I am a genius, so I guess I am saying that.
Yeah, it's good. You know, it's funny. I was watching a random YouTube video of this guy going out for CFL tryouts in the States. And it might have been the Eskimos, but he went in as a linebacker. And after the practice, he said that they didn't do any linebacker drills at all. It was all, you know, defensive back drills. So that just shows you how much different it is in the CFL. You have to cover so much more when you're playing the linebacker position. So to have a guy that can is really good at coverage playing that position is a good thing. So good call on your part.
Well, I just thought that he is fast, but he's not the fastest. He is big, maybe a little bit too big for a DB, but he also can hit. I felt that was a really – I just felt that he had all the tools to be – the right pick to play Sam linebacker. And I'm glad to see he's getting the first crack at it. Now, obviously, it's first couple of days of camp. None of this stuff is set in stone. But I remember a couple of years ago, Terrence Tolliver was running with the first team offense as a rookie, and it was like, okay, that's a little weird. But there was a reason for it. And we see now, just got the contract extension. He's a great player when he's healthy. So while it's hard to chisel these things in and say this is what it's going to be like come day one of the season, I think we get a pretty good idea of where the team's looking when we see the first couple of days. Now, whether this stuff sticks, we don't know, but I don't know. I like the idea of Ellis at Sam. I just think he's the right guy that's on this team to play that position. He's a veteran of the CFL, which I think makes a big difference too. He knows, having played halfback, understands the waggle, understands the coverages. I think that's something that you look for. Very rarely do you see a rookie come in and excel at that position. We saw Eric Harris do it a couple years ago with the Ticats, but that's not normal. So getting a veteran to convert from DB to Sam, I think is a good call by the team, and I think Ellis has all the tools to be successful there. So we're going to get a chance to see it. That's a good thing.
Yeah, no, it seems now they can afford to move a halfback or a DB up to the linebacker position because they've, you know, addressed the problem, on paper at least, of that secondary. So, you know, just have a little bit of depth in that position and those positions is a great thing.
That secondary does look, on paper, mighty good right now, if I do say so myself. I think if they solve that issue, and we've talked with this obviously all offseason, especially after they signed Kinney away from Ottawa, but if that unit is, you know, 50% as good as they were, like 50% better than what they were last year, that gives the defense, like, I just think that if they could be better, the whole defense will be better. And the front seven of this defense is good as is, even with a bad secondary last year, that front seven was still pretty good. Give them a decent to good secondary in the back there, I think the sky can be the limit for the defense.
Yeah, if they're 50% better, we're going to win 3-4 more games. Like, I'm just guessing here, obviously. But to have people back there that can actually stop the pass and make tackles, for God's sakes, it makes me more comfortable with this team, knowing that that part of the team is going to be improved.
And we're a couple weeks away from not having to speculate on if this secondary will work. We're going to actually get to see it in action, which is maybe the most exciting part about this.
Absolutely.
Last little bit of camp news is the unexpected quote-unquote retirements of Justin Capicotti and Damond Washington. Now, they've been listed as retired, but the scuttlebutt is that they're retired in name only, and this is a bit of roster maneuvering by the Ticats in order to get a couple extra guys. These guys are both injured, so this would get a couple extra guys into camp to give a chance to have a look. How do you feel about this? Because I'm a little perturbed, if you would, by these sort of roster moves, because I feel like they're manipulating the rules in order to kind of take advantage of what the like the spirit of the rule actually is. And I understand when we talked about it with the Fan Twos thing, it's like, if you're allowed to do it, you're allowed to do it, and I understand that. But this sort of thing brings me back to sort of the lack of transparency in the CFL. Like, the idea is that neither of these guys are actually retired, so putting them on the retirement list, bit of a sneaky move, don't you think?
Yeah, it's a bit sneaky, a little bit shady. But once again, I don't have a problem with it. It's not against the rules. I know I'm repeating myself, but if it's not against the rules, then it's not against the rules and they didn't do anything wrong. So if you're looking at it from another, if you're a fan of another team, I'm sure that you look at it and go, ah, those sneaky bastards over there in Hamilton. And I'm not going to deny that it's not a little bit shady, but I personally don't have a problem with it.
Yeah, I guess it's, it's Eric Tillman. This is what he does. He tries to bend the roster rules in ways that suit him, and if he's not getting fined for it and the league doesn't have a problem with it, I guess it's okay. It just looks a little less than savory, if you will.
Yeah, it does. I would say, if the CFL has a problem with it, then they should change the rules to be more transparent, perhaps. They should make the judgment call to change that rule so this stuff doesn't happen.
Yeah, I can't really disagree with you there. I think you're right. You see something like this, and it's like it's your team, so you have a little more leeway if you understand. Whereas if you see another team do it, you're kind of like those cheating buggers. But
for sure, it's
you're right. If the league wants to get rid of stuff like this, then they make a rule and don't allow it. But until they do,
just like they should make a rule that the roster or the depth chart should be out on a certain day before the game for fantasy football purposes. We've talked about this before.
Yes, we have. The injury lists, all that sorts of stuff should be made available. But until the league decides that it's a priority, and this is something they need to change, teams are going to try to bend the rules as much as they can, right? Like, they're going to try to do what they can to give themselves a competitive advantage. And I hope people remind us of this whenever, if we ever, get on our high horse and get on our soapbox and rail against another team for quote unquote cheating. But I'd have no problem with people throwing this back in my face, because you're right. Like, teams will do whatever they can to give themselves a competitive advantage. And this is just one of those ways. And this is what the Ticats are doing. And like you said, league wants to get rid of it, then the league can do it by making it illegal.
Yep. They're not cheating. They're not.
No, you're right. You're right. It's not again. If it's not illegal, you can't break the law if there's no law to break.
Exactly.
Okay, moving on. You want to talk some CFL news? We got some we're basically going to turn to the Argos podcast again, like we did a few episodes ago, where all the major CFL news kind of revolves around the Toronto Argonauts. It's crazy how that happens.
Yeah, they're making a splash there in Toronto.
I wonder if all these moves are happening now because their coaching staff and their front office was so late to the game. But first things first, I think this one is of most interest to most of our listeners. The Argos traded a little-known offensive lineman by the name of Peter Diakowski to the Saskatchewan Roughriders for American receiver Armonte Edwards. What do you think? Who do you think won this deal, if we could put it in that parlance?
I think that both teams made out well. I don't really have an opinion on who won the deal, but I think that Saskatchewan needs help along the offensive line, and the Argos need some more receivers. They have, a couple big names in S.J. Green and Fuller, but both have had injury troubles in the past. S.J. Green, not so much, but he's coming off a major injury to his knee, so they needed help, and this kid looked pretty good last year. Edwards came in. I don't think he was a starter at the start of the season, but I know he came in later on and then made some highlight catches and some really big plays. So I think it's a win-win for both teams.
I absolutely agree with you. I think this is a total win-win. Both teams dealt from a position of strength to address a position of weakness. It's usually never a good idea to trade an American for a Canadian, but in this case, the Argos have a lot of Canadian offensive linemen. They have some pretty good Canadian talent throughout that roster. Maybe not a ton of quality starting caliber Canadians, but they have a lot of depth. And the Rough Riders I went on record a few days ago saying that they were going to have to cut one of these American – the amount of American receivers they have, Daron Carter, Ricky Collins, Caleb Hawley, Chad Owens, Bakari Grant, Naaman Roosevelt. Like, that's six American receivers, all of which have starting experience in the CFL, all of which would start for a number of teams in this league if they weren't on Saskatchewan. One or two of those guys was going to go anyway. Edwards might have been one of them too. So to flip him and get something for him, especially to get a guy who, in Peter Dykeski, can come in and play right away, he's going to be a starter for that team at the start of the season. Like, that's a pretty darn good trade for Chris Jones and Saskatchewan Roughriders.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job, and so did the Argos. I mean, you're right about the receivers. I was looking at all the receivers because I was making up the list for our video game rankings, and there's a ton of guys there. And the one thing that kind of surprises me is that they said they brought in Owens mainly as a kick/punt returner, and I thought that his returning game has declined over the last couple of years, and I thought that he'd be just a receiver for the rest of his career, but you know, I guess they see something in him still.
I found that really odd too, and I read that when he first signed, and then I just read it again recently. I can't remember where, but I do find that odd. I still think he could be a good returner. I think he could be he'd be solid, but he's not that spectacular playmaker like he was 5 years ago. And we have to remember that was 5 years ago when he was winning the MOP and helping Toronto win a Grey Cup and returning kicks, returning punts, and returning missed field goals, and being a top-flight receiver. Like, that was a long time ago that he was doing that, and injuries have obviously taken their toll on him since then. He showed last year in Hamilton that, when healthy, he can still be a dynamic playmaker. But, yeah, to rely on him as your kind of sole return man, I think that's a little questionable, but I'm not in charge of Saskatchewan Roughriders. I still think he can contribute. I still think he'd be a good return man. I just don't think you look at him and go, well, he's in the same categories as a Logan or a Banks or a Chris Rainey. He's not that guy anymore.
Yeah, and he got a raise when he went out to Saskatchewan, and to take away his receiving duties is kind of strange to me, especially since he's making more money than he did last year with the Ticats. And he's turned into a pretty darn good receiver over the years. So, yeah, it's a bit of a head-scratcher.
Yeah, it's weird to me because I feel the same way. Like, he was a return man who played receiver and has become a receiver who can also return. I think his value is much more on the offensive side of the ball than it is on special teams. And even if he's only going to be used in certain packages, because maybe, you know, they want to use him as a return man and he's going to be a backup, sort of that sixth receiver off the bench sort of thing because he's older. I still think last year, if he didn't get hurt, he would have gone well over 1,000 yards, probably would have scored close to 8 or 9 touchdowns. Like, he would have had one of his best seasons last year if he would have stayed healthy. So to bring him in Saskatchewan and to not utilize him to where I think he's best now, I think is a mistake.
Yeah, I think it's a big mistake too.
So speaking of the Argos and speaking of bringing in guys who it's been a while since we've seen him play, they agreed to terms and re-signed Marcus Ball. Do you remember him from a few years ago?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Really, really good player for them. I believe his last game was the 2013 East Final. And if I'm not mistaken, he went up to all the Ticats players after the game and shook their hand and congratulated them on winning the East and going to the Grey Cup. And I thought that showed a heck of a ton of class. I became a fan of his right then and there as a person. I liked him as a player. I thought he was a really good player, but 2013, it's 2017. He spent a lot of time in the NFL bouncing around practice rosters. I don't know if you remember, but a few years ago when he was with the Carolina Panthers, there was this kerfuffle with Odell Beckham Jr. of the New York Giants, and he said that players from the Panthers had intimidated him with baseball bats coming on the field prior to a Panthers-Giants game. Marcus Ball was that guy, was one of those guys who apparently intimidated Odell Beckham Jr. So the most famous thing he's done since he's left the CFL is, I guess, you know, intimidate one of the best receivers in the National Football League. But I still think he can play ball, but 4 years away from the game, that's an awful long time. You don't usually see guys come back from that long an absence and become a player again. The only one I could think of off the top of my head that came back from that long a stint in the NFL after being in the CFL is John Chick. Now, if Marcus Ball is John Chick, great move by the Argos. But if he's not, I think this is a name signing that just ends up kind of flailing.
Was he just practice roster guy? Did he start any games? Did he play any games?
I don't think he did. I'd have to look it up. But my recollection is that I know he was with the Panthers. I'm pretty sure he was with the New Orleans Saints. I think he was with the San Francisco 49ers for a spell. But I don't think he played – I'm not sure if he played in a regular season game.
All right, so you look at one way that he's hasn't played football in a while, but another way is he hasn't been beating up his body for the last 4 years. So it all depends on the motivation. I think that it always depends on the motivation. If the guy is talented enough to be a pro football player in the CFL and then go to the NFL, he comes back with that motivation like John Chick did, like you said. He could be a dominant player again. If he doesn't, then he'll be gone real quick. I think that with Trestman there, he will find ways to motivate him. He will get a lot out of him because he's just such a great coach. And from what I've heard, a player's coach. So I think that if I had to guess, I think that he'd come back and he'll be a big success.
Okay, so just so we're clear, he actually did play 20 games in the NFL over the course of three seasons. Played 12 with the New Orleans Saints, starting two. He played one with the Carolina Panthers and five last year with the San Francisco 49ers. So of those 20 games he's played, only four of them, or five of them, six of them. Oh, my God, my math is – I was subtracting instead of adding because I'm an idiot. Only six of those came in the last two seasons. So it's been a while since he's seen the field. So, but yeah, he did get some playing time, registered 15 tackles and five assisted tackles. So he has had some playing time, but not a whole heck of a lot. So we'll have to wait and see. But I think it's funny, and maybe I'm alone in this, that when he was in Toronto, it was the Scott Milanovic, Chris Jones team. It's kind of surprising that maybe he didn't go to Saskatchewan, but I guess maybe he's just more comfortable in Toronto. And I guess, Milanovic and Trestman have had a relationship, and Trestman's probably a very similar coach to Milanovic in that way. And hey, maybe the guy just really liked the city of Toronto, and if that's the case, good for him and good for that team.
Yeah, and I believe that 4 years in the NFL gets you NFL pension, so he's not as worried to I failed in the NFL or whatever. He just wants to come back and make some money and play the game that he loves. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens.
Could be. It'll be interesting to see this Argos team. They've kind of built a really strong defense. They've kind of – I don't know how to peg them this year. When we do our annual predictions, I'm going to have a hard time trying to figure out where – because the Argos could be one of those teams that's either, holy crap, they're competing for a division title, or, oh my God, this was a complete disaster. I don't know where it's going to fall.
Yeah, I it's a really big question mark because – the bringing back Ricky Ray, and that some could argue that was kind of the downfall of Barker and Milanovic, not moving on from Ray when they had a couple guys that are younger and are bona fide starters in this league that they just let go. So yeah, it's gonna there's a lot of things to look at the Argos, and Ray is one of them, with Trestman, seeing if he can bring out that greatness in him again. So it's gonna be a very interesting season in Argoland.
So, speaking of interesting, this is probably the biggest bombshell of the week. Just earlier today, the Alouettes released Bear Woods. Like, talk about a surprise of all surprises. If you would have asked me, name a player from each team around the league that's not a quarterback, that's pretty much a lock to make their team, I probably would have had Bear Woods as a lock to be on the Alouettes, but woke up this morning, checked Twitter as I was doing some business, and what do you know? He's no longer with the Montreal Alouettes. Were you as surprised as I was?
I was shocked. I did a double take when I saw it. I just, the night before camp starts, to let a guy go like that is crazy. And Kavis Reed said it wasn't a money thing, and I don't believe that, really. Unless they have someone that they think can take over that spot and do a hell of a job and cost less money, I don't see this being a good move at all.
It's, I don't get what the Alouettes were thinking. And in the aftermath of the release, it's kind of been a bit of a cluster with the Alouettes. You had Anwar Stewart, who I think we all know from his time with Montreal for years, being there, a stud defensive lineman, comes out talking about, he sent out a tweet, said, your only leader is cut in Bear Woods. Cox takes a pay cut. John Bowman will be close behind. Yep, I said it. Let the BS begin. Go Al's freedom. It's he doesn't seem too happy about it. Then you had Jacques Chapdelaine come out and do a press conference, I guess a post-practice scrum, basically saying that he didn't really agree with the move. Just like, what the heck is going on? Like, you kind of got some distension there in Montreal. It's starting to look like the picture is not too rosy out there in Montreal.
Yeah, this is, you know, first, second day of camp, and the head coach is publicly saying that him and the GM aren't on the same page. It's definitely not a good start to training camp or to the season for the Alouettes, just from a PR standpoint. They just look a little bit dysfunctional already.
Yeah, it's an odd situation, but obviously Bear Woods is gone. He's not in Montreal anymore. So that leads us to the always asked, where do you think he's going to end up? I have one team above all else. I'm pretty sure we probably agree on it. It's the Argos, right? He's probably going to be with the Argos.
That's what I think. You know, it's a, I believe Bear Woods played, I remember seeing his hair for the first time in the East final and thinking, who the hell is East final? And that game against Montreal in the Big O, you know, that classic, or the East semifinal, I forget which one it was.
East semi.
Yeah. So Tressman and Pop were still there, so they're kind of familiar with each other. So yeah, I could totally see him ending up in Toronto.
Well, like we said, it's the Toronto Tiger Alouettes, or the Alouette Cats, whatever you want to do. They've got SJ Green, Alan Michael Cash, they brought in Winston Venable. Obviously, the Ticat players they brought in, we don't have to go through them. We've been through that already. I just feel like you look at all the teams out there, to me, even if without the former Alouettes connections, Toronto makes sense, and maybe Winnipeg makes sense. They saved a lot of money with the retirements of Garrett Wagner and Ryan Smith, so they could fit him in there if they needed a linebacker. I just think Toronto is the team that he's going to be playing on, and if he's not, I'd be surprised. I do not expect him whatsoever to be playing in Hamilton. No. I think you got Simone Lawrence, you got Larry Dean. Now we presumably have Dominique Ellis. I don't think, especially at the price he's going to command, this is a guy who has twice been the division's most outstanding defensive player. I don't think there's a need for him here in Hamilton, especially a guy like Larry Dean's probably making close to league minimum as a guy who's only in his second year. I think you get just as good of a player out of Dean as you would getting out of Bear Woods. I think Bear Woods is better than Larry Dean, but I don't think the drop off from Woods to Dean is so significant that you would move Dean or you would get rid of Dean to bring in Woods. And I think the money aspect plays a role in it too. So any Ticats fans out there hoping that Bear Woods plays for Hamilton, I think you're wishing up the wrong tree or whatever Rickyism I can think of right now.
Yeah, it's just a position that we're not in need of talent, really. So I don't see that happening either. I'm not a huge fan of his. I'm sure that would change if he was a Ticat, but I wouldn't be jumping for joy if they signed him.
Yeah, didn't the Ticats beat them? I think they beat them in the season finale in 2014 to host the East Final, and he came out and said the better team didn't win, and we'll come back here in 2 weeks and we'll kick their ass or something. And then that's when Brandon Banks became a legend, two big punt returns, and the Ticats just absolutely blew the Alouettes out and sent him with his bear tail packing between his legs. So no, I think he's a bit of a loudmouth, and you know what, when he's on your team, you like that sort of stuff. But yeah, there's some I think bad blood still brewing. Ticat fans have long memories, so I think I don't think he'd be as welcome on the team as maybe some other players.
No, I have no interest in seeing him in black and yellow, that's for sure.
So the plan was to next go to the receivers, Mike, but we got some breaking news. And we got some breaking news. Justin Cox, remember Justin Cox was defensive back for the Rise last year, released by the team after he was charged with domestic violence. He was found not guilty. And that's a little bit of a game changer, don't you think? He was after this happened, the commissioner, Jeff Rourke, came out and said he would not allow any team to sign him. But now that he's been found not guilty, that's got to change things, no?
It has to. Even if you think of him in a negative manner because of his past. No one signing him, the commissioner saying that, no one can sign him, was because of this incident. Now, if he's not guilty of that incident, then you can't really hold any restrictions on him because that's what you kind of suspended him for.
Yeah, I think it would be... Now, look, we're not in any way saying what he was accused of is in any way... You can't redeem that by playing on a football field, but look, he was charged, he was released, he was found not guilty, and in a court of law, to me, that supersedes any rules the league has, and if this guy still wants to play, I don't see any way in which the league can ban him. He was accused of a crime, and I think the Riders were right to release him. I even was okay with Orig saying, okay, you know what, we gave you a second chance, and you screwed it up, you're gone, that's fine. He's found not guilty, that changes everything.
You can't ban him now. Now, a team bringing in a guy like that is a big risk, you know, to the public. You know, if he messes up again, then the team's going to look horrible. So, I don't think you can ban him after this not guilty verdict, but I don't necessarily think any team is going to take a shot at him anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if any team would want to put up with the headaches that would come with bringing him in. Yeah. And especially, and what happens if they bring him in and he does this again and is found guilty? Like, I don't think there's a need anymore to ban him. I don't think a team would bring him in. He was super talented. He was a great player for the Riders last year. But I think even then you have to balance out, is it worth the risk of bringing a guy in who could be a problem, the distraction it will cause when you sign him, the media scrutiny you'll be under. I don't think it'll happen, but I don't think the league has any leg to stand on anymore when it comes to saying that he is banned from playing in the league. Like you said, this was the incident that pushed him over the edge. This incident has now been resolved, and he was found not guilty. He didn't cop a plea. Nothing like that. He was found not guilty by a jury of his peers. I'm not sure the league has a leg to stand on when it comes to enforcing this ban.
No, they absolutely do not.
Okay, so with that breaking news out of the way, why don't we get to something fun? And our last group of video game players are video. I've never figured out how to properly say this to where I don't sound like an idiot. Our last group of CFL player ratings for video games. I guess that's the best way to put it. We took last episode off. We're back this week with our West Division receivers. Before we get to that, Adam, who has been sending in his rankings every week, sent in his East receiver ratings. So I said we'd reveal these for anyone who sent them in. Adam sent them in, so I'm going to reveal them now. He's got Luke Tasker at a 93, Terrence Tolliver at a 91, Brian Timms at an 81, S.J. Green at an 88, Jeff Fuller at an 83, Khalil Payton at a 77, Deontay Spencer at an 84, Greg Ellingson at a 93, Brad Sinopoli at an 89, Nick Lewis at an 87, Ernest Jackson at a 94, and is it B.J. Cunningham?
I believe so.
Of Montreal. He has him at an 84. So, Adam, there's your rankings. We look forward to hearing how you rank the West receivers, which is our go-to this week. So, Mike, where are we starting in the West?
We'll start in Edmonton. We got Bowman, Hazelton, and Zylstra. I got Bowman at a 97. You could argue that he maybe could be a 98 or a 99, but those drops... that he, you know, he's gotten better over his career, but he still drops one, you know, every two games or so. It's still a fairly common occurrence with Bowman. So he gets a 97, Hazelton an 88, showed a lot of talent in his rookie year, didn't see much of him last year. So I think the 88's pretty fair. And Zylstra, an up-and-coming guy, just not enough. I haven't seen enough of him to put him, like, in the high 80s or 90s. So I gave him an 84.
Oh, okay. You know what? I'm always curious when you start off to see, okay, how is this going to work out? Where are we going to – are we going to be the quarterbacks where we were one or two off of each other? Are we going to be the running backs where we were wildly divergent? And based on your first three guys, it looks like you and I are going to be pretty darn close when it comes to ranking our wide receivers. I got a Darius Bowman at a 98 for all the reasons you gave him a 97. Same reasons I gave him a 98. If he eliminated the drops, he's a 99. But those drops drop him down 1 point. He's my top-ranked receiver. But, yeah, No one on my board got a 99. He came the closest, 98. Hazleton, 87. For all the same reasons that you had him at the number you had him at. Because, again, great rookie season. I think the guy's got a ton of talent. Didn't see enough of him last year. Brandon Zylstra, 85. Again, for exactly why you said. We saw flashes from him last year that I thought he could be a player. He's going to get a chance this year in replacing Darrell Walker out there. But yeah, gave him an 85 because I haven't seen enough to be able to get him higher than that. So pretty close when it comes to the Edmonton Eskimos. Mike, where are we going next?
We're going same province. We're going to Calgary. We got McDaniel, Daniels, and Jordan. McDaniel gets a 95 for me. The guy is just catches everything that's thrown his way, you know, through no fault of his own. He gets a little bit lower because he's not exactly the tallest guy in the world. And, you know, you could say he doesn't really have blazing speed, but he has enough speed to, you know, do just fine. Daniels gets a 90. I think he really broke out last year, and he's going to have a monster season this year playing with that Calgary offense. And Kamar Jordan gets an 85. Basically just because I was impressed with what I saw from him, but I didn't see enough to give him a really high rating.
Oh my God, this is spooky. I got McDaniel at a 94. Again, he would be higher if he was faster, but he's a possession guy, but he is so darn reliable that it's hard to put him any lower than a 94. And the other two guys, Daniels and Jordan, 90 and 85, exact same as you for the exact same reasons. Daniels is a guy who I think – if he puts together another solid season like he did last year, bumps up into that upper echelon of receivers. But after one season, I can't give him that 93, 95 rating. He's still got to earn a little bit. And same with Jordan. I'm with you 100%. We saw some flashes from him that where he looked really, really good. And then I think he got hurt and missed some time. So as crazy as that is, we're pretty much in lockstep on the Calgary Stampeders and the Edmonton Eskimos. I'm waiting for us to find somewhere where we diverge, but so far, all the same.
I think we might diverge a bit here, maybe in the next three teams. I got Winnipeg up next. Got Dressler, Adams, and Denmark. Dressler gets a 93 from me. If it was a couple years ago, he'd be higher, but he's had injury troubles. He's getting older. Still think he's a really, really good receiver. Adams gets an 89. Another breakout guy that I think should have a really good season this year and maybe be in the 90s next year if we do this again. And Clarence Denmark just, you know, he fell off the map, wasn't on a team, wasn't playing football, came back, and now he's a stable in that Winnipeg offense. I got him at a 90.
Okay, so our first big difference is Weston Dressler. I have him as an 89. I dropped him a bit. He wasn't great last season. Again, getting a little older, injuries are taking their toll on him a little bit. I still think he's a dynamic player, but I look at the size and the age and the injury history, and I got to knock him below a 90. So I went as high as I could, which to me was an 89. Darvin Adams, I have as a 91. I think he's the best receiver in that group. I think again, if he's a guy that can stay healthy, I think he's young enough that, yes, you're right. If we do this again next year, we could be bumping him up into the mid to high 90s if he could put together a full season. And Clarence Denmark, I have as an 88. Pretty much agree with all the reasons you had him ranked where you had him. Kind of fell off, but he's won himself some favor back in Winnipeg. He's got the ability to be a big, big playmaker for them, but he's not the go-to guy in the Winnipeg offense. So I like their receivers. I think it's probably the worst stable of receivers. Maybe them or Saskatchewan. Saskatchewan's got a lot of high-end guys, in my opinion. But Winnipeg has a lot of solid guys, but I don't think they have one spectacular guy. The closest they have to spectacular is Adams. But I got to see him put it together for a full season before I can bump him up into that upper echelon.
Fair enough. We'll go to Saskatchewan next. You got Carter, Chad Owens, and Naaman Roosevelt. Daron Carter, I have as a 98.
Ooh.
Yep. I just think that, you know, the personality stuff aside, we're not basing it on that. Yes, he has issues, maybe you would say, within the locker room and with his teammates and all that stuff. Hopefully he's matured because I think he's a hell of a player. I give him a 98 because he's just an all-around great receiver. You know, he's a tall guy. He can jump up and make those plays. He has the speed. He has the technique. He's a great route runner. So, yeah, it's a really high rating, but I feel it's justified for Jerron Carter. Now we go to Chad Owens. I gave him an 89. I think if he was healthy all last year, he would be in the 90s. But since he didn't play, you know, a good quarter of the season, I got to give him just below 90. And Naaman Roosevelt showed a lot of good stuff last year. Gave him an 87. And once again, I think that next year he could be a 92 or a 93.
Okay, so I got Jerron Carter at a 96. I agree with everything you said about him. And I don't know if Madden or a CFL video game or any video game would have like a knucklehead rating. but that would be the only reason I dipped him below the – I got Bowman at 98. I got another guy at 97. He's just a notch below that. But it's not based on talent. It's based on the knuckleheadness. And so I just because of that, I rated him a little bit lower. I got Chad Owens at an 86, a little lower than you had him. Just, again, the injuries have piled up. And, yeah, if he would have put together a full season last year, he would have been ranked a lot higher for me. But – again, he hasn't played a full season now, I think, since 2012. So until he can put it all together in a season again, which I don't think is likely, although he may, you know, with getting less reps on offense in Saskatchewan, it might be possible that he could play all 18 games. I can't give him too high ratings. It's just tough when it comes to injured players. A lot of my rankings come down to guys getting hurt, and if they get hurt, it's a lot tougher to give him to want to push him into that upper tier. And Roosevelt, I disagree. I have him as a 91. I think he's a guy, much like Adams, much like Daniels, who I think has shown a lot but hasn't shown over a full season. At one point last year, he was leading the league in receiving, and then he got hurt. But again, it's the injuries. He would have stayed healthy last year. I think we would be talking about him in that 95, 96 range. I think he's got the ability to be that player. Whether he gets a chance to show it in Saskatchewan with all those other mouths to feed is yet to be seen, but I'm a big Naaman Roosevelt fan, so I got him pegged as a 91.
All right. Now our last team is the BC Lions, which, oh man, they got some talented receivers over there. We got Arsenault, Burnham, and Williams. Now Arsenault gets a 97 from me. He just was on fire last year with Jonathan Jennings throwing him the ball. Just a great receiver. I think he deserves that rating. Brian Burnham, this might be a little bit of a surprise to you. I have him really, really, really high as well. I got him at as 96.
Ooh, that
96.
Is high.
I'm a big Brian Burnham fan. I think he's just so, so talented, and I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. So got him at a 96, and Williams is high as well. Now, yes, he's coming off that injury, but we've just seen in the past what he can do, especially in the receiving game the last couple of years, not so much in the return game when he was with the Red Blacks. Obviously, when he was with Hamilton, he was out of this world. But I got him at a 95 just because I think that he can be – I think that he can – even if he loses a little bit of speed, he's still, like, lightning fast. So coming off that injury, I still think he'll be very, very, very productive.
So you and I both have all three BC receivers in the 90s. We both have Manny Arsenault at 97 for every reason you said. I was going to make him my top. I was going to give him a 99, but Bowman is a little bit better. I think Bowman does a couple things a little bit better than Arsenault, but I'm kind of regretting not making, because I love Manny Arsenault. I you're right. With Jonathan Jennings at the helm there, he has been outstanding. So I knocked him a little bit, but 97 is still pretty darn good. I got Brian Burnham at a 94. Basically, for the reasons you have him at 96, I don't think we've seen the best of him yet. I think the ceiling is still there for him to get up to, and I wanted to give him a little room to grow. So I think at 94 is fair. I think it's high, but I think it's fair. And with Chris Williams, bam, right on line, 95. I know I said injuries are a factor in how I rank guys, but Chris Williams has had one injury. And every year he's played a full season in the CFL, he's had over 1,000 yards receiving. He's a touchdown machine. He's still probably one of the fastest players in the league, even with a torn ACL. And if he didn't get hurt last year, he might have been my number one ranked receiver because he was on a torrid pace. He had like 1,200 yards receiving and missed like six games. Like, that's incredible. Yeah. Like, the guy was putting up monster numbers. And, yeah, so maybe the injury lessened him from, say, a 97 to a 95, but I still think he's one of the best receivers in the game. And I think that if we were playing a CFL video game, I would want to be the BC Lions because that offense is awesome.
Absolutely. I the potential for all these receivers with a guy like Jonathan Jennings, who has been improving every game he's played pretty much. So, you know, the potential for that offense is just through the roof.
Absolutely it is. They're going to be a fun team to watch this year for sure. So those yeah. That's it. Those are all the position groups and players that we have decided to do. But we are going to let the listeners out there, all you guys and gals out there listening to the show, hit us up with players you want to hear us rank. We didn't do any defensive players. We didn't do the offensive line. Throw them to us. If there's a player or two out there, or 10 or 15, throw them our way. We'll rank them. We got a couple of weeks left before the regular season starts. Once the regular season hits, I think we'll put this away until next off season and maybe come back to it. But for the next couple of weeks before we get into the nitty gritty of the start of the season, throw us some names. What guys do you want to hear us give a video game rating to? Throw it in the comment section of 3Down Nation. Hit us up on Twitter. Whoever you want to do it, we'll take the names, we'll write them down, and we'll come back to you in the next few episodes and give you our opinions on some guys that you want to hear us rank. But Mike, that's it for this week. We are done once again. This will be the last show, sir, that you and I do where we don't actually discuss a game. The next time Mike and I get together will be after the Ticats' first preseason game, which is airing on TSN. So while it's preseason football and not regular season football, this is the last show now until December where we won't talk about an actual football game, Mike. That's pretty exciting.
It's very exciting. We have, 21 weeks of talking football ahead of us.
Nice, nice, nice. So, like I said, that's it for this week. Remember, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes or listen to it or download it at 3downnation.com. You want to hit us up with your CFL players you want us to rate for a video game, or if you got any questions you want us to answer, you can always hit us up on Twitter. Mike, your Twitter handle is always, please.
Mike_TicHats.
And I am at JoshSmith_82. And you can always post those questions or, like I said, those player ratings or those players you want to hear us rate in the comment section of 3downnation.com. So that was episode 74 of Podski Wee Wee. I am Josh Smith.
And I'm Mike Graham. Eat 'em raw.
Eat 'em raw.